What's up, you beauties? Welcome to High and Wide Radio, episode 50 of season 4. My name is Jim Iacobone, and I'm joined by the one and only Jack Smith. We will be joined by our guest, Mr. Colin Newby of the Hockey Writers, in just a bit. If you're not listening live, please make sure to subscribe, follow, and listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and watch on YouTube. Let's also shout out the affiliate sites, fullpresscoverage.com and The Painted Lines. While you're listening to the episode, don't forget to check out our site, hwhockey.net. Always new content going up over there where you can now find the Pod Street Bully podcast and the Time My Skates podcast. Jack, you know, it's another week in August. You know, we're going to get to the World Junior Classic. Obviously, Canada won that. Some standout performances from Flyer prospects, which looking forward to talking some positive things for a change. But I want to get the negative or the somewhat negative. I guess it's still a negative. I want to get it out of the way now before we get our guest on, because I want things to be nice and positive when Colin comes in. I think the report came out today. Adam Kimmelman put it out that Ryan Ellis or John Tortorella mentioned that he does not expect Ryan Ellis to begin training camp with the Flyers or be ready for the start of the regular season. Something that I think most, if not all of us, already knew, but Tortorella basically confirming that Ellis, he does not expect Ellis to be ready for the start of the regular season. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, he sandwiched this in between sky is blue and water is wet. I mean, yeah, what else is new? I mean, if he ever plays again, I'll be surprised. You know, fingers crossed. But yeah, him being ready for the start of the season was a pipe dream. We all knew it. If he plays at all this season, it'll surprise me, honestly.
It's unfortunate. I don't want to keep harping on, like, you know, this time last year, we're all getting ready for the season. You know, oh my God, Ryan Ellis, Cam Atkinson, Ristolainen. Seems like forever ago when that happened. But, you know, Ryan Ellis goes on to play 4 games, as everybody knows. And, you know, missed essentially the entire season. And the future is still a little bit cloudy. It was never really specified what exactly is going on. It was kind of said that, you know, it's kind of a combination of things going on in the midsection, hip area, groin area type thing. So it still doesn't sound good. Doesn't look good. If you're listening, maybe don't put any stock in Ryan Ellis coming back anytime soon. And you'll be pleasantly surprised if he does. I think we all will, right?
Oh my God. Yeah, I would die.
Yeah.
A lot of people's perspective has changed. Ryan Ellis is a massive part of that. I mean, he is vital to not just Provorov, but the entire defensive pairing. Imagine if he played at 100% the whole season, like he didn't have the injury history. We saw the Ryan Ellis we saw in Nashville. I think, you know, they're still going to get banged up last year, but I overall think it's a much, much different season just having him back. For Carter Hart as well. I think it would have done wonders for him too. It really goes understated how important having him in the quote unquote Niskanen role, which he could have been better in. And we barely sniffed any of it. So it was definitely the biggest cog in my opinion as to why things went downhill so quickly the way they did.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. You know, hopefully things work out for Ellis. I've said it a bunch of times on the show. If I had a list of, you know, guys that weren't on the Flyers who I like to watch play hockey, Ryan Ellis was on that list. So I was pretty excited when they got him. Yeah, just unfortunate. I don't think we're going to be harping on him too much or unless there's some sort of news that comes out about him. So that's probably going to be the last that we talk about Ryan Ellis for the foreseeable future, right?
We're going to get these random updates throughout the year of he's skating, he's trying this, he's trying that. Ultimately, I don't think he's coming back no matter what they say. I just think it's them reminding us that he's with the team and he's trying to come back. We see this all the time with other players, and I think he's going to fall right in there. But ultimately, I don't see him suiting up this year.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. So, all right. So, I mean, that's kind of the only news that's come out, right? It's mid-August. You know, we still got 3-4 weeks till training camp starts. Players are starting to come to Philadelphia. I think I saw Delorier, Ristolainen made their way to the city. So they're here. They're getting ready for the season. So it's that time of year, you know, where there's nothing really to talk about. And, you know, it's the time of year where we're going to be getting different perspectives, you know. And our guest for the first time is coming on our show, which extremely excited about. Was trying to get Colin on for the last couple months, but it's summer. Colin's a writer for multiple teams, busy guy, but we finally had the pleasure of getting him on. So why don't we introduce our guest, Mr. Colin Newby of the Hockey Writers. Colin, thanks for hanging out, man.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, stoked to have you on. How's your summer been, dude?
It's been great. Got down to the Jersey Shore a lot and still trying to talk about whatever there is in the world of hockey, as always.
Right. I mean, it seems like – so the Flyers have kind of made it easy for us the last couple seasons. And it hasn't always been good, obviously. But they've given us topics to talk about. And, you know, for the last week or two, it hasn't been much. So we're kind of – you know, digging around for topics. Luckily, we have the World Junior Classic to talk about, some positives there. And then I would love to get your take on, you know, what you're expecting from this season or how you viewed this offseason. And, you know, obviously new Flyers head coach Tortorella. But let's start out with the World Junior Classic. Did you watch any? Did you have time to watch any of that, Colin?
Yeah, I followed each of the Flyers' four prospects. It seems like Emil Andre is the one that everybody's talking about, the one that made the most headlines. So that's pretty promising to hear that a young defenseman is taking steps in the right directions. I even heard him get compared to Kimmo Tiimonen. And I think it was the Latvian coach that said that, compared him to one of the best Flyers defensemen of the modern generation, at least. So you have some momentum in the right direction there. The defensive prospects are actually somewhat deep at this point. We've talked about Sanheim and Provorov for years now, but they do have a little bit of pipeline coming behind them. There's Ronnie Attard and Cam York, who played at the NHL level last year. They have Andrea. They have Igor Samula. So it's good to see them moving in the right direction on the blue line.
Absolutely. Jack, you want to add anything in there? I mean, the Flyers, I mean, when you say it like that, because I think we kind of get a little bit down on the NHL roster these days. Like, we're focusing mostly on Provorov, Sanheim, but you just mentioned Attard, Cam York. Now we're talking about Andrea. Like, here we go again. The Flyers all of a sudden have a little pipeline of defense coming up, right? Like, Jack, you want to comment on this at all?
I mean, definitely love what I've seen about with Andrea. He can't, any way you shake it, it's just great news. It's what you want to see in your young prospects, so what you see them want to do. He was the guy they went to when they needed a goal. He was the captain. I mean, just checked every box, you know, and gave the U.S. a run for their money when they're down 3-0. He never gave up. Like, it was just fantastic to see. I do worry a little bit, and we have some names. I don't know how much of these guys I see as, I think a second pairing defenseman is probably the best for, I guess, York. Samula, I'm not even sure where I stand on him at this point. Organizational depth, I guess, and we'll see what happens from there. But to that same point, it was nice to see Andre come and do what he did, because I felt that the top end talent, the guys who could make the NHL and stick, was pretty limited, and that this made me feel a lot better. I do like Attard, though, by the way. So yeah, it's nice to kind of reshuffle the deck a little bit and bring some younger guys in and up and have them push in a stabilizing year. So that's the perfect year to have these guys knock on the door and see what they have.
Sure. And I think he displayed a pretty quick wrister. That was the one takeaway I had from his game. Surprisingly, when you're reading a lot of these scouts and analysts, they haven't mentioned his shot much, but I think in the World Juniors, that was the part of his game that stuck out. He could just flick that puck from the point, and he was really running the Swedish power play and the offensive attack pretty well.
Yeah, and so I know we're going to talk World Junior Classic, but you mentioned some guys here. And while we have you on, why not talk a little bit prospects, right? So you mentioned Ronnie Attard, and I know you've seen this kid up close and personal. This is a confident human being, right? Colin, I want to get your thoughts on what do you think about Ronnie Attard? Because, you know, we've had many a conversation in our group chat, and not that I was ever down on this kid, because he came up last year and I think surprised a bit. He could stick in the NHL last season, made some plays where it's like, okay, well, this kid's got some tools. You see him up close and personal. You see he exudes confidence. What are your expectations with Attard, maybe long-term?
I think he could be a useful player at the NHL level. I come from a much different mold than Ronnie Howard when I watch hockey. I'm from the old style tree, like the Justin Braun type that says, get in your position, don't let up a goal, and that's what a defenseman's supposed to do. That's not what Ronnie Adder is, and that's not how you should look at him. And in his NHL debut last year, he was chasing people all over the ice like a chicken with his head cut off, and I had a very bad first impression. Well, he didn't play that many games. I think he played 10 games last year, give or take, but by the end, I had a much different impression of him already. So I think he took a lot of steps forward in that short of an amount of time. I also remember in the last game of the season, even I was lucky enough to get to talk to Bill Meltzer, the Flyers guru, for a couple of minutes after the game. And I mentioned one play that Adder made. He was out on the penalty kill, stood up the Senators forwards as they entered the Flyers zone, quickly got possession right down the ice. That's the type of fundamentally sound defense that you hadn't seen even 10 games before that. So I like what I saw from him. He was much better in the final game than he was in his first game, if nothing else.
I mean, that's important too, right? You want to see kind of improvement as the more they play. Would you say he starts with the Phantoms next season? He's 23 years old, right shot D. Does he start with the Phantoms?
I think logically, if you just look at the roster, I don't see where he would fit out of training camp unless you have another year like last year where everybody's injured right away, then maybe you plug him in. But I think logically he should end up with the Phantoms to begin with, possibly work his way up to the NHL level at some point during the season.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's going to be that kind of year, right? They said, Jack, what was the term they used again? I don't know how I forget.
Stabilization year?
Yeah, stabilization. That's it, the freaking word. Maybe they see what they have in a couple guys and they start rotating some of the younger guys in. You know, I mean, can Justin Braun play 82 games at 35 years old? I don't know. He did it the last couple of years, but let's be honest. He's getting up there. Jack, you mentioned, you know, he's got to lose a step. You know, he's not getting any faster, that's for sure. So maybe Adderd takes a turn in the lineup here and there. So, let's get back to the World Junior Classic a little bit. Emil Andreja, 8 points in 7 games, 4 goals, 4 assists, outstanding, captained Team Sweden, correct? When did they lose? Did they lose in the quarterfinals or the semifinals?
Semis.
Semis, okay.
They ended up getting the bronze.
Oh, okay.
The consolation.
There you go. Yeah, so that's a big deal. Great experience for the kid. And you know, he's on the map now. Whereas if Flyers fans weren't paying attention to him before, he was the talk of the summer, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely right. Made the best impression of the four guys there, I would say.
That's for sure. All right, so let's get to a guy that I'm a little bit excited about. And I'm trying to hype him up. I'm being that guy because I just want to see. Right. And the guy I'm talking about is Tyson Forster. Looked great at development camp. Right. Colin, he was in shape. Like, this kid's in the weight room for sure. Another guy that exudes confidence. Had a pretty solid World Juniors. You want to talk about Tyson Forster for a little bit?
Sure. Last year, right before Elaine Vigneault got fired, Chuck Fletcher held a press conference just a couple of days before. And he dropped in a line that I haven't really heard get that much chatter. And I'm not sure why, because I think it was really important to this organization's philosophy. He said that the problem with the Flyers' power play is personnel driven. So they let Michel Therrien go with Elaine Vigneault. They're going to have Rocky Thompson, a new coach this year. But Chuck Fletcher himself said the problem on the power play is a personnel issue, and that the best power plays in the NHL have players who can shoot the puck from the flank position well. The Flyers don't have that. Tyson Forster was their first-round pick in 2020, and that's really the hallmark of his game. They also acquired Owen Tippett last year. I think that was part of the logic that he has a shot from the flank position. But I think they view Tyson Forster as the guy they want to stick in there on that power play. That's the best part of his game, and I'm glad you brought up development camp because I thought it was pretty telling that Mike O'Connell, who's in the Flyers development staff, he mentioned that Forster looked very confident coming back from injury. And that's something that the organization had some concerns about, was these younger guys coming back and maybe being hesitant, not trusting their bodies. He thinks Forrester's in a spot where he can put the injury behind him and move forward in his development now.
That's, you got to get a little bit excited about that, right, Jack, when you hear that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly trying to. It's a little reminiscent of some of the Hextall prospects way back when. We know how that turned out, so I just want to temper expectations. However, I don't want to temper them too much because things are so bad, we need something to look forward to. So,
yeah.
Yes, please.
And that's somewhat what I'm doing here. Like, I'm looking for any reason to be positive and any reason to have fun. And, you know, you see a kid like Forrester come in and then go on and have the tournament that he did, 3 goals, 3 assists in 7 games. This kid can shoot the puck. And, Colin, like you mentioned, Flyers are missing a player with his shot right now. I mean, obviously, Cam Atkinson can shoot the puck. But a trigger guy, like a guy that you're going to feed pucks to, and just all he's going to do is rip shots. That's Tyson Forrester, right?
Yeah, it's important to temper expectations. And I think one thing you have to keep in mind is the whole top-end talent thing that we've been obsessing about. You could be an NHL player. It doesn't mean he's going to be top-end talent. We'll see how he develops over the next couple of years.
That's a great point. So it's temper expectations. But, you know, this kid's a good player, but temper your expectations a little bit. You're right. I'm not doing him any favors saying he's going to have a massive year on Twitter. But I genuinely think that. I think, you know, let's be honest. He's most likely not going to be on the Flyers next season. But I think no matter where he plays, this is a 30-plus goal scorer next season. Maybe 35, you know. He's probably going to be with the Phantoms, right?
I would expect him to be with the Phantoms to start off. I guess it's a similar situation to Attard, where if you do get the types of injuries you did last year, well, then maybe he is up. And Fletcher and Tortorella also talked about seeing what they have in certain younger players. I think that applies to Morgan Frost, Tippett, Ratcliffe a little bit more because they're older than Forrester. But I think you could group them in there as in to say we have to evaluate our prospects in another year, especially the guys that have had injuries.
Interesting that you brought those guys up. We're going to get to them in just a little bit. Let's finish up our World Junior talk here. We have who's the other two? Denoye. He scored a goal, didn't he?
The Destroyer.
Yeah, what'd you think of the Destroyer?
I've really never heard a bad thing about this guy, I feel like.
Seriously.
He's the type that coaches love. Kind of in the same mold as Noah Cates. When Noah Cates came up last year, everybody in the organization just lauded him. I think he's a bottom six, the gritty type, the hard to play against, as the Flyers organization loves to say. I remember Denoye dressed in a preseason game last year, dropped the gloves out there with a defenseman who was 6'2", 6'3", I want to say, more from the Bruins. I think he moved over the Ducks this offseason. But Denoye is listed at 172, and he's dropping the gloves with a big defenseman. You got to respect the kid's attitude. That type of chippiness usually plays pretty well in earning respect in the Flyers organization, so maybe he does move up the pecking order and gets himself a little bit of a chance in the bottom six. I think that's where they project him.
So Jack and I were talking about Denoye last week, and we were trying to figure out who can we compare this guy to? Who does he remind you of? Is there anybody on the roster currently or you know, in the recent past that Denoye reminds you of?
I guess Cates could be that guy. Cates, I don't know if Cates is as cheap. Maybe cheap is the wrong word. Selling Cates a little short for his edge and upping the ante on Denoye a little bit. I guess he won't rack up as many penalty minutes. Maybe that's a better expectation to put on him. But I think he's that type of coach's favorite player type, where why can't you be more like him? Because it's the bottom sixer who needs to earn his role doing every single thing right, who doesn't necessarily have the offensive talent of a guy who's going to just show up and get power play time and hit the score sheet every single night.
For sure.
Yeah, I love Denoyer. He reminds me. He's like how I felt about Allison 2 years ago. Like, I just feel like he can come in and be in the bottom six. And, like, if he were to, like, make his – probably his ceiling, which you hope their ceiling is limitless, but, like, he could be like a Brendan Gallagher type of player. You know what I mean? He's small. He was a late-round draft pick. He's got a lot to prove, chip on his shoulder. Well, if he can go with anybody, at least has the, you know, the guts to go with anybody – he's going to be an immediate fan favorite. And if he's a guy who finds himself in a situation where the puck's on a stick in a shooting lane, whether on purpose or by accident, he's going to know what to do with it. We've seen him score at the junior level. So at least he's not inept at that offensive ability. When, not that we're counting on him for it, but it is nice to get some goal scoring in your bottom six when the situation arises. So he's got a lot to like if he can put it together and keep competing, if he can stay healthy. That's the thing with Allison. If Allison just can't stay healthy. If he can stay healthy, you know, we might have something there, that something we can rely on and be excited about going forward. And I'm very, very excited about Denoyer, and I really hope he finds his way up here sooner rather than later.
And one nugget we got about him the other day is apparently the Flyers are looking at him as a little bit more of a center now, to where when he was drafted, they looked at him as a wing. But he played center for Canada most of the time.
Ah,
interesting.
Need centers.
Yeah, I mean, we need everything. Yeah, that's for sure.
Patrick Brown better watch out.
Yeah, Jack's favorite player.
I'm Braun.
All right, so last but not least, Brian Zanetti, did you have a chance to watch him at all?
This is a guy who admittedly I don't know as much about. He had a lesser role for the Swiss team, who didn't fare that well. And he even got scratched at one point during the tournament. He's a fourth rounder from last year. One thing I do know about him, he's playing for the Peterborough Petes of the AHL, or OHL, not OHL. AHL. And from what I know about the OHL is it's probably the most heavily scouted league. So there's not always a lot of surprises that come there, to where the European leagues, maybe there's some hidden gems. In the OHL, I think it's more you are what they say you are, so it's going to be tougher for Zanetti to make his way up the pipeline if nobody's necessarily picked him out as a stud just yet.
Interesting. Interesting analysis there. Yep. So, yeah, Zanetti, 19 years old, 6'2", 183, listed on hockeydb.com. He had 2 assists in 4 games in the World Junior Classics for Switzerland. And, yeah, all right, so good stuff there. A nice little recap of the World Junior Classics. Flyers players played well. You know, I think overall, Flyers fans should be happy with the way their prospects performed. Now let's move on a little bit to the current roster, right? And all of a sudden you can, we have to talk about this team.
So much for that positive vibe, huh?
Yeah. So let's kind of get to some of the players that, you know, you mentioned here. And Jack, you mentioned this is going to be a stabilizing year. Colin, you mentioned players like Morgan Frost, Owen Tippett, Isaac Ratcliffe even, they're going to be under the microscope. What kind of see? I mean, when you hear stabilization year, Colin, what does that mean to you?
I actually kind of like the idea of a stabilization year. I wrote before free agency started that a lot of times in Flyers conversations, we're talking about this whole retool or rebuild thing. And it doesn't have to be as cut and dry. The idea that I presented was probably more similar to what they actually did than most people thought. I like the idea of stabilizing. I don't like how they went about it. I think that Tortorella is the real essence of that quote that we're going to say a million times, the stabilizing. And I like the hire, but I just don't think that they put together the roster necessary to do it. The idea is we were an embarrassment the last 2 seasons. We have to stop being an embarrassment before we start being a Stanley Cup contender. That's sound logic. But what Chuck Fletcher did, I just don't really think he executed that. And my biggest problem was the backup goaltender position. If you go into the season with basically no backup goaltender, you're leaving the most important position in the sport unstable and trying to help your team stabilize. I don't really know what that says about his overall plan and how well it's all going to come together.
I think there's a reason they got all those D minuses on that scouting report for the organization that went around. I'm sure everybody saw that. And you're right. You're right. If they were up front from the beginning, I don't think many people would be as upset as they are. But to your point, and I've always said this about Carter Hart, because he catches so much unnecessary flack, to put all this on his shoulders, is the guy going to play 70 games this year? Like, they signed a guy who, as a backup, I guess, to compete with Sandstrom, or the two of them are going to tag team it, I guess, to back up Hart, who's got, what, 12 NHL games under his belt, if that?
So like, Hart has four – he had 44 starts last year, which is his career high. Grossnick, the new guy, has 4, and Sandstrom has 5. So they combined for 9, and Martin Jones played 35 last year. So he played about 4 times as many in one season as these two guys have combined. And now you're asking them to provide stabilization behind Hart, who has had injuries. It's just risky, and it ignores everything that happened the year Fletcher got hired in 2018-19, when you use 8 goaltenders. That's an NHL record. And of all people, the Flyers should know that stabilization, you have to have good goaltending. And I don't know if they're going to this year.
I'm going to say it now. There's going to be those people who, after Hart's playing his like 8th game in a row, who are going to hate on him for having a bad game, and it's going to drive me nuts. This is organizational malpractice. You don't do this. Like, come on. Let's be honest. He put all his eggs into the Fedotov basket, and when that went down, he was like, oh, shit. You know, and I guess his – I'm surprised you couldn't bring in somebody else. Maybe he's hoping to pick up somebody along the way on the waiver wires. His only saving grace at this point. But for what he did, I mean, if you're going to buy out Oscar Lindblom, I thought maybe a real backup goaltender might be involved. I actually thought it was a different reason, as we all did. But, you know, if you're only going to bring back Braun and sign Delorier to that deal, I at least thought like maybe a backup goalie would be coming along with that or something, or move some money around. Nope, just no, not a care in the world. Well, throw it on this guy, like you said, 9 games combined in the NHL, and just hope and pray for the best. How do you hope and pray for stabilization? Like, it's just – and you're right, most important, not just position for the team this year, but he's your franchise guy going forward. And he's going to – I'm at the point – it's been discussed, not just on this podcast. If things go horribly again, could he ask out of town? And would it even be that crazy? I don't think so, and that is a dangerous game to play.
It's a thought I hadn't considered, but now the cat's out of the bag.
Unfortunately, yes.
Horrible.
So let's get to the opposite end of goaltending here, Colin. Who's going to score goals on this team?
I like what Cam Atkinson brought last year. I don't think he's your ideal first liner. And I think Travis Konecny has now proved himself in about the same category as Atkinson, where he's a good second line winger, but he's not really the top end talent that we're all talking about. We do forget about how good Sean Couturier is, though. To be fair, I forget. He's an excellent two-way player. That's his reputation, but his puck control, his shot, I think we're going to remember quickly what a healthy Sean Couturier looks like next year. So that is one reason for optimism. Granted that it goes well through training camp and he is able to recover, but at this point, he looks to be on a good track. I hope we get Couturier back at full strength. He is going to be one of the centerpieces. If by default, well, that's a whole nother question, but I am curious to see Couturier, Kevin Hayes in a similar situation also, coming off injury. You're hoping that he can regain the form that we saw a couple years ago.
Good points there. And I think a lot of people forget, Kevin Hayes finished really strong. Once he was actually right, once he was actually healthy, I believe it was maybe 3/4 of the way through the season, he looked like himself, and he was putting up points. So I think he was just about a point per game player.
So he came back on March 5th and played 28 games. He had 22 points. to finish off the season. So just those were his numbers, and it was a breath of fresh air after that terrible start.
For sure. If they can get that Kevin Hayes heading into next season, go ahead.
No. Your thing went funny. I thought you weren't here, so go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So for Kevin Hayes, that's not just good for him. I mean, it's good for his line mates. That's good for the Flyers. If Kevin Hayes can take that kind of production into next season, huge, huge boost for him and his wingers, whoever they may be.
Sure. Charlie O'Connor of The Athletic actually called Kevin Hayes the Torts Project. I thought that was a really interesting phrase because in Tortorella's opening press conference, somebody asked him the players that he was looking forward to coaching. At first, he kind of passed off the question, but he went back and actually said Kevin Hayes, and he was really looking forward to pushing Hayes to a new level. So that'll be an interesting dynamic coming up in the years under Tortorella.
Interesting. Jack, how do you think that relationship goes?
I just hope they get off to a good start. It just feels like one of those things, if they get off to a good start, it could work. If they get off on the wrong foot, they're not coming back. I just, the way the personalities are, I see Hayes being like real sarcastic and like a dick if things don't, whatever, where, Tortorella's not changing, but if he buys in, and Atkinson's going to be huge in this because he's a player in the locker room. He supported Tortorella. I think he can get Hayes on board. And ultimately the team has been so bad. How do you not bring in a guy who's been successful and at least listen to what he's got to say and fall? I don't want to say fall in line. It makes it sound, like the army, but you want to win too. Like, you're here to win. You've gone through horrible seasons. It's, you want to play to win. You want to be competitive. I think you're going to listen to a guy who everywhere he's gone is essentially, if he hasn't won a cup, he's definitely turned that team around. The team he just came from in Columbus is the perfect example. So I think it's going to be okay. When it comes to Tortorella and players on the Flyers, Hayes isn't necessarily a player I'm worried about.
Good points. I want to get to a question here before we get too far away. You guys were talking goaltenders. Dave Campo, this is the year to let the young goalies have a chance in the backup role. It's not like this team has much of a chance to go far. So aside from Sandstrom, is there another player who we could potentially see as a backup, you think, Colin?
Sure. Chuck Fletcher said Sam Ersson will have a chance to compete in camp. I think Sandstrom is really the front runner there, but it's not to say that Ersson couldn't steal the net. Like we just talked about, it's not exactly solidified. So why not? If you want to throw Sam Ersson in there over Felix Sandstrom, I would have no problem with it. And as we've seen in the past, think about Jordan Binnington. Like, these guys come out of nowhere sometimes. Goaltending is the most unpredictable position probably in all of sports, not just hockey. So, hey, if you want to give Sam Ersson an opportunity in the net, why not?
Yeah, this is the year. Like Dave's kind of alluding to, this is the year where you can try things, the stabilizing year. See what you got in some players.
I agree with the comment about Ersson, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Gosnick is whatever. I think the organization's down on Sandstrom at this point. I'm not even 100% sure they're going to bring him back if they had other options. Ersson's the guy. I mean, I think the organization views him ceiling-wise as number two only to Hart. I really think they like him a lot. If you look at it, Dallas with their goaltending situation, how that's come out, his name slips my mind at this point. But, Bishop retires, and this guy comes out of nowhere and overtakes everybody. And thank you, Ottinger. Yeah, and now he's the guy. They're looking like he's the guy. And, Holpe's out of there. And, so we can be in a situation. At the very least, we just need a backup. So if something like that happens, I would love to see Ersson get every opportunity. I still think he's a little raw, but it is what it is. If Sandstrom is a great opportunity for him to turn things around, it's very unlikely. We've seen him play a lot, and it's not exactly the best system to be playing in either. So it's very easy to say, let's let the goalies run with it and see what they can do. Well, when you're playing in front of a horrific defense, it's not exactly what you want to do for your young goaltender, especially at a position that really is big on confidence. So I understand the thought process. I do think they're in for a shellacking if they're not careful. But Ersson's the one guy where I'm not sure when, but I am very curious. In camp, I'd be very curious to see how he does.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, interesting. You know, they got the Grossnick guy, and then they have Ersan Sandstrom. We'll see. Is Sandstrom signed?
Yes.
Before?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Ustaminko is no longer with the organization, if I correct. Remember correctly.
Yes, sir. All right. So here's one for you. You a Morgan Frost guy, Colin? Because it seems like there's no in between. You either are or you're not.
The most polarizing figure in the organization that has John Tortorella. Morgan Frost. I don't know what to think. I'm really not optimistic. If this doesn't tell you all you need to know, the only reason that I still feel good is because people that I respect and I know that they know the game are pointing to good things about Morgan Frost, and it's nothing that I've actually seen. Hmm. I just think he is not confident with the puck. He doesn't move well, and he just has a knack for doing strange things on the ice and just kind of getting lost out there. My confidence level in Morgan Frost has dropped a lot. It seemed at points last season, the organization was practically begging him to step up and come into a full-time center role. At the end, he did play pretty well. Once they got Owen Tippett, they got him on a line with Noah Cates at the end of the season. They played pretty well, but it was such a short stretch that I can't read into that without Frost having sustained success. What I'm really thinking about with him is he flipped the puck into the zone on the power play against the Penguins out of play, that's the type of thing that sticks in my mind where this guy just can't get it together as much as the Flyers might want him to.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, you know, like you mentioned, he'll do one good thing and then all of a sudden do something so bad leads to a scoring chance. And it seems like the Flyers have had a lot of these type of guys the last couple of years. Shane Gostisbehere comes to mind. You know, he'll do something really nice, pretty to look at, and then all of a sudden the puck's going the other way, or he forgets to get back on D, or is his guy's the guy going the other way. Something, you know. And if you're going to make mistakes, it's okay, but don't make the mistake that's directly going to lead to a scoring opportunity. You know what I mean? And Jack, what do you think? I feel like Colin's pretty much hitting a nail on the head there with Morgan Frost. What do you think?
It's exactly why I'm a Morgan Frost guy, but am I being pulled to the other side? Like I almost want to be like, give me a reason, man. Like, come on. Like it's been so long now, and all we can hang our hat on is his first call up when he had a beautiful goal, and you know, he had another goal and then he kind of fell apart. You can blame COVID for slowing his development. And then just the end of the year, oh, we had a good run at the end of the year. Well, I'm so sick of hearing that with players, because most of those teams are already in the playoffs. They're trying not to get hurt. They're not killing themselves. And I need more when it matters. I need him to be like this. I'll give you October to at least settle in, but like November and December and January, you got to like, look at all the other young, good players in the league. And there's a lot of them. Like, they are playing consistently very good hockey. And it just seems like there's so many holes in his game. And we just continuously make excuses. And while, yes, the ability is there, if you don't put it all together, then what? You know, at what point do you pull the plug? This is a massive year for Morgan Frost. He, one, needs to stay healthy, and he needs to prove he belongs in the NHL at a consistent basis. And I think it's imperative that he gets off on the right foot sooner rather than later. And I'm not talking about just camp. He can have a great camp or whatever and make the team or whatever, probably out of necessity at this point. But he needs to get going. He needs to show that he belongs, and he needs to Tortorella should be good for all the mistakes he makes. You know, I mean, fingers crossed, hopefully. And then when the time comes, he can, you know, cash in. But I'm pessimistic when it comes to Morgan Frost right now. I'm ready to roll my eyes. And I shouldn't feel that way about this guy. I should be ready to get excited. I should feel about him how I feel about other prospects, and I don't. I'm ready to either defend him and feel like I'm fighting an uphill battle or just give up altogether.
And he's been a rookie for three, going on four seasons now. He's played 77 games. He's not up for Calder anymore. But yeah, I mean, this guy's it. He's played two games in 2021. I'm sorry, 2020, 2021. So you can't really count that. We'll give him a break there. But 77 total games in the NHL, 7 goals, 23 points. This was his, it was his third season in the NHL. And we didn't see much improvement. You know, we're just still kind of, it looks like we're watching a kid try to find his way in the NHL. And Colin, let me ask you this, because we've heard from quite a few people that his game might not transfer to the NHL. Like, you can get away with what he was doing in the OHL, you know, because he slowed the game down a lot. In the NHL, you can't play that way. You're right. Like, could it just be that he has to change his game and he's having a hard time doing that?
I guess there's elements to it. The reason I'm always patient with prospects is I remember back to Sean Couturier and Scott Laughton, two players that I really like. I was probably a little bit too hard on them when they first came up, and they did what you're talking about. They kind of changed their game. They adapted to the NHL. I don't really think Morgan Frost is that type of player, though, because Sean Couturier, when he first came up, he was kind of in a fourth line center role, maybe jump up to the third line. Good face-off man, two-way forward. Laughton was bringing some of the sandpaper. He was also playing in the bottom six. I think with Morgan Frost, it's more like score or nothing, and he's not scoring.
No.
So can he change his game? Can you change your game if you're just a scorer? I don't know if that applies to him. Do you think it does?
No, I don't think it does. And
he'd have to become one hell of a playmaker. Yeah. Like, he'd have to turn into Danny Briere for like that style of player, you know, be operating behind the back of the net and dishing out passes for me to believe that he can change his game. Because there's no way he's doing anything else besides scoring goals or that. And that's a big change within itself. So I don't, that's what I mean. Like, I just don't see him breaking through like that. I maybe a little bit or some small stretches, but over the course of a full season, feels like wishful thinking, like really wishful thinking.
There's big picture reasons to give him a chance. So I'm glad we at least worked that into the conversation. Like the injuries, the COVID, yes, it has been hard in that way. But just if I'm a betting man, no way would I touch Morgan Frost. NHL career.
Well, a lot of other teams and a lot of other prospects have dealt with very similar situations and they've come up on top. And it's like, all right, like there's can't be an excuse left in the cupboard, pal. Like, it's time. Like, this is it. And if he gets hurt again, are we just going to push the goalpost back again? Like, this guy be pushing 30 before we know what the hell he is. Like, he just needs to play. He just needs to stay, be consistent, and consistently produce at some kind of level. And I'm just not optimistic about that.
You know what the biggest shame is? Because earlier we're talking about Tyson Forster, and he's a guy, you know, you feed him pucks, and he needs a player like we're hoping. I don't know if we're even still hoping, you know, we're kind of just, can he do it or not? But Morgan Frost could be that guy. You know, he's supposed to be the magician with the puck, you know, draw defenders in and find the open man type player. And if he can be that still, because, you know, you never want to lose all hope. You always have a tiny shred. As long as he's on the roster, you're like, come on, Morgan, we know you have it in you. Just pull it out. Just do it. So until he's not on the roster, I think we're all kind of hoping just a little bit, because if he can be that guy, like Jack was saying, you know, puck distributor, if he can be that guy, huge benefits to players like Owen Tippett, Tyson Forster, guys that can rip the puck, right? So it would be huge for Morgan Frost to have some kind of a breakout season, whether it's 40 points, 40 points, I'll take, you know, because then you're like, okay, well, let's see if he can build on that. He's only, what, 23 years old? So, I mean, not exactly a young prospect anymore, but not old by any means. You know, you could still work with that. So hopefully they can figure him out. The other player I wanted to talk about, because you brought him up earlier, Colin, thoughts on Owen Tippett? Can he be that guy on the power play? What can we expect from Owen Tippett? Because when he came to the Flyers, you know, and let's not think about the trade and, you know, what the Flyers got back for Giroux. Let's just think about the player as he is on his own. Is he a player that the Flyers can count on for 20 goals in a season, you think?
As of right now, no, I don't think that. I think he's in the same boat as Morgan Frost, to where it's all there and there's an opportunity being handed to you, but now you're the one that has to seize it. So could he go out and get 20? Yeah, sure. But to expect him to do that, that might be a little bit lofty. If Owen Tippett had been in the organization as long as Morgan Frost had and not had that benefit of a change of scenery and a fresh start, you'd probably be just as frustrated with him. He was the same draft year, and he was much higher in the first round than Morgan Frost, actually. And he is a little bit longer of a track record in the NHL, but not by much. He's in the same boat of just kind of waiting for development. I mean, he's got a lot of raw skills. If you look at the advanced metrics especially, it tells a good story about Tippett. His numbers were very good at the end of the year last year, especially in terms of expected goals in the final 21 games is all he had with the Flyers. His expected goals for percentage was higher in that stretch than any of the Flyers over the whole season that played as many games. So he flashed. He got some scoring chances, but he had a knack for hitting the post, which is driving everybody crazy. And his career shooting percentage is under 8%, which we talked about that issue of scoring from the flank. If you're shooting under 8%, you're not doing that with the top power plays in the league. Those guys are shooting 15, 16, even Drysdale's way higher than that. So you can't get doubled up by superstars if you're Owen Tippett and you want to carve out a role as a power play shooter.
And I would agree with that. So I wasn't necessarily being Debbie Downer, but when a lot of people were high on Owen Tippett, I was kind of like, well, you haven't seen enough of Morgan Frost. Like, it's the same situation. You know, it's the same different player, but same thing. Like, this guy's got to prove that he belongs in the NHL. He's a high first round pick. I think people want to be excited for him because he's who they got back for Claude Giroux. But he's a third line guy. You know, he's a third line guy on a team with Travis Konecny as your second line guy. Like, if not a knock to Travis Konecny, but like, you're playing behind Travis Konecny, you know, like, I don't know. Not a knock. I'm not knocking anybody, but I'm just not as high on Owen Tippett as maybe some other guys.
Sure. I think it's just human nature. Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, no, go right ahead. No, you're good.
I think it's human nature when these guys come up. You get excited for basically the shiny new toy, and then when they struggle, you look behind them of who's the prospect that I'm not frustrated with yet, and that's probably Tyson Forrester versus Morgan Frost, who you are frustrated with, and Tippett kind of falls into that boat. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're okay, Colin. You're the guest. You have free reign here, man. You could do no wrong. All right. So interesting stuff there. So let me ask this because he's come up a couple times in the chat here from Christopher and Scott. Have you heard anything on Wade Allison? I haven't really dug around on him or not, just because I figured if there was going to be news, we'd hear it. Have you heard anything on Wade Allison?
I think there's a pretty simple question with Wade Allison. Is he healthy?
Yeah.
I mean, they loved him at the end of, I guess it was 2020-21 season. He played 13 games, his first 13 in the NHL, and they loved what he brought to the table with some energy, a little bit of scoring ability, the role that where he could play in front of the net and on the power play, maybe chip in offensively a little bit and get some grit in the bottom six. But I think it really is as simple as health with Wade Allison. And last year, they obviously couldn't count on him. He battled injuries in college, through the minors, now at the NHL level. So it's black and white. Is he healthy? Is he not?
Such a shame, man. Because
it is.
Not even just for his on-ice stuff, but this kid's like a little – he's a spark plug, right? He's a firecracker. He'd be such a positive influence in that locker room. So hopefully – you know, hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully they get him under some kind of contract, whatever it may be. And he's a part of the organization. And Dave, no, he's not signed yet. He's RFA, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so interesting there. Maybe they want to see him prove he's healthy first. I'm not sure, but, you know, camp is just about a month away. So I would expect to hear or see something in the coming weeks, if not days, for Wade Allison, hopefully. All right, so we talked about some of the wingers. We talked about some of the centers, Morgan Frost, Kevin Hayes, Sean Couturier. Why don't we touch on, before we get to Coach Torts, why don't we touch on the defense a little bit? Flyers are working with Ivan Provorov, Travis Sanheim. He's playing on his last year of his deal. Has been quoted as saying he's completely fine. He's very comfortable playing out the last season of his deal without a deal in place ahead of time. Ivan Provorov, where, you know, things have come out behind the scenes, maybe that he'd be open to being moved. His end of season press conferences, I'm sure you know, Colin, was a little bit weird. He seemed frustrated. Flyers go out and bring in Tony DeAngelo, Justin Braun's back, Ristolainen, another polarizing figure. What's your take on what the Flyers have going on defensively, Colin?
Individually, I don't want to crush their defensemen, but I think as a unit, it kind of symbolizes Chuck Fletcher's big picture plan here. He's paid a lot of money to assemble this defense, and they don't really look that daunting. And I think it's just kind of a mismanagement of the salary cap. I am excited to see Tony DeAngelo. I liked the acquisition in some ways, not in others, but if there's one thing I can give them credit for, they addressed their issues last year, breaking the puck out of their own zone, because that was painful to watch a lot of times. They turn the puck over on their own boards all the time, and Chuck Fletcher's talked about that a lot. The ability to move out of your defensive zone just helps you defensively in general. Tony DeAngelo does bring that to the table. And I do remember last year on Black Friday, the Hurricanes played in Philadelphia. DeAngelo really lit it up. The guy can move the puck. He had two assists. And just on crisp passes, moving around, that's what a high-octane offense looks like down in Carolina. Maybe he can bring some of that to his hometown or quasi-hometown. He's a South Jersey guy. Maybe he gets into a good rhythm here. We'll see how that acquisition works out, because he's probably going to have to play on the first pair after you guys already talked about what's going on with Ellis earlier.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And Jack, do you think playing in front of, you know, hometown fans does anything for DeAngelo? Do you think he can bring that kind of energy for all 41 home games, or –
I 100% think he's going to bring energy. Whether it's going to be positive or negative is going to depend on his play and how the crowd is reacting. He is an emotional player, to say the least. When things are going good, he's going to be great. When things are going bad, we'll see. I like the acquisition. I wanted it a year earlier when it was a much more reasonable price. At $5 million, kind of takes the shine off a player like that. Feel like a guy who you bring in to do what he does should be sheltered in his 5-on-5 play a bit. Playing him $5 million and having him unfortunately have to play on your top pair would make sense for the cap number, but we're going to see if there's going to be trouble. He can be a mess in his own end, but to Colin's point, he is a wizard on offense, and he's going to help the power play out. He's going to be a lot better than what we've seen back there. And that's exactly what we needed with a parable being a joke. So I understand it. Fletcher definitely gave up the moon when you consider a plethora of draft picks and a lot of money, but it's only 2 years. We'll see. Ultimately, I hope that he just stays pretty even. You know, I hope he brings what he can on offense and is okay at best on defense. And, hopefully they still realize they still need a number one defenseman and do something about that in the, you know, going into not this season, but next season. And he can kind of pull back a little bit, and then it makes more sense. But this year, buckle up, because who knows what's going to happen.
So Colin, I got to ask you, and we're going to get to Torts, so don't worry, but you know, you mentioned some not so positive things about Chuck Fletcher on about, you know, some of the players we've been talking about, mismanagement of salary cap. And, you know, he's kind of maybe you can see his vision, but he's kind of patching things up in order to stay on whatever his track is. This Tony DeAngelo trade, you said you liked the move for some reasons and you didn't like it for others. Does it bother you at all that Tony DeAngelo, it's known now, he wanted to come to Philadelphia last season, right? We know that Carolina paid him $1 million for 1 year. Does it bother you at all that the Flyers, he could have been a Flyer last season. Maybe he would have signed on for less or re-signed, whatever. Instead, Fletcher decides not to take a chance for whatever reason, brings Justin Braun back or whoever, whatever he did last year, and then goes out and trades. How many assets was it? Was it three?
Three. Second, third, fourth.
Assets. Gives him a, you know, $10 million deal for 2 years. Does that bother you at all? Does that say anything about Chuck Fletcher to you, or is that just me making a big deal for no reason?
Yeah, I think it does bother me. I think that Fletcher uses his leverage incorrectly in the sense that he identifies what he wants and doesn't put a limit to getting it. He chases and chases and chases. That was the problem with Ristolainen. If you want a big, tough defenseman on the back end, I don't have a problem with that. That's great. I love to watch Ristolainen play, actually. But you gave up way too much to get him. You're paying him way too much money. And I know DeLaurier is your boy. That was a great interview a couple weeks ago, by the way. And congratulations on getting him. But I feel the same way there. If you wanted to bring in a tough player to play on the fourth line, great. But you don't have to sign him to a four-year contract and pay him. I guess it's 1.75, so it's not huge. But it's just that he identifies it and he does whatever it takes to get it. And that's not a good way to use your leverage on the open market. You could even say the same thing about Kevin Hayes a couple years ago. He paid a lot of money for Hayes. He even sent a draft pick to get the rights so he could make the deal before free agency even happened. So you're not conserving resources wisely. And I think what you just said about Tony DeAngelo passing on him last year and getting him this year, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about.
For sure. It's frustrating.
Piggyback that. I don't remember who it was about DeAngelo. We heard that, and I don't know if it was Fletcher, but we heard that the organization wanted to bring him in, but somebody in the Comcast level had mentioned that they didn't want that bad PR, which is hysterical coming from this organization. Then a really good organization brings him in, and sure enough, there you go. But yeah, like this guy burns through assets like it's nothing. In a stabilization year, why are you burning through assets? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. And we always hear, like, well, there was a lot of competition to get this player. It's like, that's the first mark it was a bad trade, in my opinion. You know, we'll ultimately see. But when he says that, it's like, okay, so we gave up too much. Like, I already know we lost the trade. Like, it's just, unless this guy overperforms, we lost the trade. Like, wouldn't you say that if you made a bad deal? They're like, why'd you give up so much? Well, I actually just barely beat somebody out. I really wanted him. Yeah, okay, sure. Like, it's like the Ruben Amaro of the Flyers. He's bidding against himself, I feel like. Like, he pays. He gives. No, you think anybody else offering a four-year deal of DeLaurier? Like, I should be shocked. Because teams who are good have players like that on a one to two up maybe, or they add them in later. They supplement their already good teams with big defensemen on the back end or good fourth-line players. Like, they supplement them in for draft picks later and then cut them loose and, you know, move on. But he's, like, locking them in. Like, it's it doesn't make sense. It's not going to work. And you see why they got ranked as poorly as they did. And the future is not exactly bright when it comes to adding talent to this team.
For sure. All right. We're just about an hour in, and we've yet to talk about probably hands down the most important addition to this roster, to this team, maybe to this franchise. Colin, I want to ask you, thoughts on the John Tortorella hire, and how do you see things shaking out under the Torts reign?
I think I like the Tortorella hire. I'm on the record before the coaching search concluded as saying I'd be happy with Montgomery, with Trotz, or with John Tortorella. Tortorella was my third choice, but I did say I'd be happy with any of those three, and they got John Tortorella. If nothing else, I am excited to see a big personality who's going to get the Flyers' names in the news, generate some excitement. I hope I don't get yelled at any point. I hope neither of you guys get yelled at any point, but we'll see how that shakes out. I might laugh if it's somebody besides me, but we'll see how that pans out. I can't wait till his first argument with a media member.
I'm sure after I cry, I'm sure I'll laugh a little bit.
Yeah. I think Elliot Friedman made a great point, though, on Sportsnet. He called Torts a piss and vinegar guy, and the Flyers want the piss and vinegar back in their organization. Well, that's exactly what you just got.
Thank God.
One thing the Flyers did right this offseason, and Fletcher had nothing to do with it.
Shit, when you say it like that, it makes it even worse for Fletcher, right? I'm excited too. And I'm not going to ask you to predict how you think the season's going to go, where you think the Flyers are going to finish, how many wins, or anything like that. Just how do you see this first season, the stabilization season? You know, no Johnny Gaudreau. You know, no really marquee player that they brought in. Tony D'Angelo is a fine offensive defenseman. How do you see this season playing out, Colin? Do you think they can compete for – do you think they'll be in the hunt for the playoffs, or do you think they're kind of going to fall back?
I think if you say in the hunt for the playoffs, just a knee-jerk reaction, that probably sounds harder to do than it actually is. Because a lot of teams are in the hunt for the playoffs in the final give or take a month of the season. If you're in 10th or 11th place in the Eastern Conference, then you are in the hunt and you're six games back. That's three wins and three losses for the team that you're chasing. I don't think that's like the craziest thing in the world to think they could get into that range. I don't think it's likely that they're actually going to make the playoffs. But if they did regain an entrance into respectability, like I was talking about a little bit earlier, I wouldn't be shocked to maybe finish in that 11-12 range in the Eastern Conference. So minimally better than last year, but at least one step forward. I realize that people are going to be furious who obsess over draft lottery odds, but I'm just saying in terms of how the team does on the ice if they get back to respectability and this whole idea of stabilizing.
Yeah, I'm beginning to hate that word, Jack. That stabilization.
It doesn't start with re. I've been tired of hearing all sorts of different words that start with re.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Colin, that's we made it. We're over an hour in. Oh, wait, we have one more question here. Let's see. So from Dave Campo, I think if Ellis, Kutz, and Hayes play more than 60 games each, there's a small chance they can squeeze in to the playoffs, I assume. The biggest problem is everyone in our division got better. And unfortunately, Dave, that's the last part of what you just said is the big problem. And
also the first problem. Part, I think if Ellis, 60, I'll take six.
Yeah.
I think Couturier and Hayes could get 60, but Ellis.
Yeah, I agree. Don't see that. Ellis. Oh, if he even skates, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Unfortunate. I would love to be excited about a potential playoff run, or even if they're in it towards the end of the year. But like, let's face it, like if they're in the hunt for the playoffs, like for what? You know, like I don't know. Remember those first round series with Hextall? That's kind of what I'm imagining it would be.
Pittsburgh, Washington, throwing a bracelets on the ice. Those were great times.
Yeah. And this is from me, like Mr. Anti-Tank a few months ago, right, Jack? Like, I don't know. As Dave mentioned, all the teams around them got better, and all the teams that are already better than them are still better. So it's, I don't know.
We just saw every team do something. We saw teams like Chicago break it down and like all right, we're going to redo this. And they've done it before and they've won multiple cups. And we've seen other teams trade bad contracts and bring in good talent too. And we just didn't do anything. It's like, so what are we doing? Because we're burning through our draft picks and we're spending money and we're at the cap, but we're really not doing a whole lot of anything. So yeah, I guess stabilization is a nice way to put it.
I somehow saw, I don't know if it was DraftKings or it was one of those betting sites, had the Flyers as eighth. I forget if it was highest or lowest, but they were eighth worst. There were seven teams that had worse odds for them to win the Stanley Cup or to finish last in the league. I forget what it was. But I was surprised.
I would believe that.
They found seven teams to be worse than the Flyers.
Well, Buffalo, Phoenix,
Arizona.
Yeah, Buffalo, Arizona.
Chicago.
San Jose was one somehow.
Montreal, San Jose.
Possibly the Canadians.
So we're missing like one.
Seattle.
Seattle. That's
they,
good.
They made some additions.
They did.
They might be a little bit better. I guess they're just an unknown. But yeah, I'd say the Flyers are in that range. I don't think they're the worst in the league, but not far from it.
They'll get there. Give them time. Season still needs to start.
A little bit of lottery luck.
Imagine if Hart went down with a serious injury in October or November.
No, that would make things.
Troy Grosnick and Felix Sandstrom.
I'll get my Bedard jersey the next day.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. All right, Colin. Well, we're coming up. We're over the hour mark. Want to thank you for coming on. Do you have anything? You do a lot, dude. I'm looking at just your Twitter profile here. You're obviously writer for the Flyers, for the Hockey Writer, member of the PHWA. You blog for the Eagles. Is there anything you don't do? I mean, what are we missing? Is there anything that you want to promote that we haven't mentioned?
No, I appreciate the shout outs all around. I spend most of my hockey coverage goes into the Hockey Writers and being at the Wells Fargo Center with the Flyers, which I love doing. But yeah, like you said, I jump around in sports media as much as humanly possible. I grew up in Philadelphia, just live and breathe Philadelphia sports, and that's what I concentrate on.
You do an outstanding job. It was a pleasure meeting you this nice past season up in the box. One of the nicest guys around. If you're not following Colin already on Twitter, make sure you guys go give him a follow. Two New Beginnings, two N-E-W-B-Y Ginnings. Give him a follow on Twitter. Great dude. Thankful to finally get you on, Colin. You're a wealth of knowledge. That's for damn sure.
Thank you, guys. It was awesome talking Flyers for an hour.
All right, we're going to wrap this episode up. So for Jack, I'm Jim. Colin, once again, thanks for coming on. Everybody will be back probably next Monday or Wednesday. Actually, we got a guest. So Jack, letting you know kind of now, we're going to do Wednesday next week. Sorry.
Wednesday. Got it.
Check. Sorry, buddy. Yeah, next time you catch us live will be next Wednesday. We're going to have a special guest on as well. So everybody make sure you're drinking your green stuff, taking your vitamins, and everybody enjoy the rest of your night.